This is Digital Story Podcast number 1037, February 3rd, 2026. Today's theme is the five iPad photo apps that I depend on. I'm Derek Story. I love my laptop, I do, but I don't want to take it everywhere. Many times these days, I'm toting an iPad mini, compact camera, and my iPhone. Does that mean I can't edit and organize on the go? It does not. And thanks to these five mobile apps, I'm fully functional wherever the road takes me. I'll cover those today and more on this week's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. The first decision to consider in a mobile workflow is the ecosystem itself. Will it be Adobe? Will it be Apple? Or will it be something else? I think cloud connectivity is important for mobile workflows, so I suggest figuring out which online storage option works best for you. Creative Cloud, iCloud, Independent Cloud, File System, who knows? It could be that as well. Because that decision then will inform the following software decisions that you have to make. The iPad mini, the current one, the latest one, is not even the most powerful tablet that Apple makes. In fact, it's not even close. It uses an A17 Pro processor, which is quite good, but you can get iPads that have M processors in them, Apple Silicon, and really just a lot of RAM, and they're workhorses, right? But even with the smaller mini, with the A17 Pro processor, all of these apps that I'm going to talk about today work great on them. And I know that because I use them. I use them all the time, and I use them with great joy. I don't feel like I'm sacrificing anything. I really don't. Now, another wonderful thing about using a tablet for your photography workflow is that you can use a pencil with it. In this case, an Apple Pencil Pro for the iPad mini. And that makes so much difference. Suddenly, that smaller screen, which doesn't bother me much to begin with, gets a lot bigger thanks to the accuracy of using a pencil. Now, where do I use a pencil? For making masks on smaller areas. I use it a lot when I'm eliminating objects from a photo because you can be very precise with the pencil. It just works fantastic. It's a wonderful companion. And I think having that makes the workflow itself so much more reasonable because now you have real tools that are very compact and easy to carry around. When I'm going out for the day, for the weekend, for whatever, and I'm traveling super light, I'm talking about a little bag. I'm talking about a little shoulder bag, you know, that, well, you could call it a man purse, but I don't like that name. But you know what I mean. That gives you an idea of the size because inside that carrying solution, shall we say, I can have the iPad mini. I can have my small USB-C card reader. I can either have one of my compact cameras. It could be the TG7. It can be the OM3. It could be the X100V. Just sort of depends on what I'm in the mood for that particular day or that particular weekend. And my iPhone in my pocket. And literally, that's all I need. I do stash a USB-C cable in there because if I need to top something off, one of the cameras or the iPad or the phone, then I just plug it into the USB-C port in my car and off to the races we go. All of this became so much more reasonable when the software evolved to the point that it has today. This is real software we're talking about. This is not compromised software. This is stuff that not only can you do the work on a tablet, but then in most cases, the work is then saved to the software on your computer at home. So when you get home, if you want to finish off the job or or back it up or whatever you want to do. You can do that and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Everything that you did while you were out and about is there waiting for you when you get home. I just love that aspect of it. All right, so let's get to the actual apps themselves. I'm going to start with Lightroom Mobile in the Adobe ecosystem, the Adobe Creative Cloud. Now, for those of us that have the basic photographer package, that's roughly $10 a month, I think, annually. I forget what the exact cost is now, but somewhere in there, it feels like I'm still only paying around $10 a month for it. We get Lightroom Classic on the computer. We get Lightroom Desktop, which is, you know, kind of the mobile version, the cloud version on a regular computer. We get actual Lightroom Mobile, which runs on the iPad. And we have Photoshop, and we have 20 gigabytes of storage. Now, that 20 gigabytes of storage is very important for those of us who aren't in the Adobe ecosystem. I'm in the iCloud ecosystem. That's where I put my money. But having that 20 gigabytes gives me operating room when I want to use Lightroom Mobile, which is often. Why do I like Lightroom Mobile so much? Well, first of all, it has amazing editing tools. I mean, really, honestly, you know, the new AI powered editing tools that Adobe has been putting in Lightroom Desktop and Lightroom Classic, most of them are in Lightroom Mobile too. So you're sitting there working on an iPad and you have Gen AI for fixing images, for getting rid of stuff, and it's substituting whatever background information is around it, and it looks fantastic. So those editing tools are wonderful, but it has all the other ones that you want too. So you can edit just about any way you want in Lightroom Mobile, unless you're just like a crazy, super multi-layered Photoshop user. I think you're going to be pretty happy with the tools in Lightroom Mobile. They are truly impressive. Plus, the organization tools are solid. Then, depending on what you have back home on your computer, those things, along with the edits, right? So you don't just get some, you know, finished picture back on the computer. You get the image that shows your edits, but also with the editing sliders in the proper position so that you can continue tweaking if you wish. If you use Lightroom Desktop back at home, then you basically have a mirror of what is on the iPad. If you use Lightroom Classic, then set up a cloud-connected folder or collection, and those images, drop those images on your iPad, the images that you want to automatically go into Lightroom Classic, put them in that collection, and they'll be waiting for you also when you get home. And then always, regardless of whatever workflow you use, don't erase your memory cards on the road. Wait till you get home, back them up thoroughly, and then you can format them if you wish. So the Lightroom Mobile, for people that are in the Creative Cloud world, is a no-brainer because it is so good. But it also plays nice with photos. So those of us that are using iCloud, I can work on an image in Lightroom Mobile, use those great tools that I like so much, and then I can just send that image over to my photos library. And it will be there, full resolution, looking beautiful as always. Now, it's flattened, right? I don't have the edits that I made won't show on the editing tools in photos because, you know, right, two different sets of mechanics there. But the rendering of the image will look the same as it looked in Lightroom Mobile. I do that all the time. If I want to do something crazy, like with five or six images in Lightroom Mobile, I'll work on them on the iPad, send those five or six over to Photos, and then I have them there, and they're in the rest of the ecosystem. Of course, I always back up all of my images. All right, so that's one world right there. Now let's get to the other world, which is the iCloud world, and Apple Photos is the second app that I just think is so important. It's solid, it's smart, and it's an excellent hub for iCloud users. You know, it is literally the grand central station for your imagery in the Apple ecosystem, because not only can it keep track of everything, not only does it use object recognition to help you find stuff, but all the other apps that I use, the other three that I'm going to mention today, all can use that database for their work as well. So whether I'm doing the work in Photos and using cleanup in their stuff, or I'm working in the other apps, they all show up in my camera roll. They all show up in my Photos library. So it is wonderful that way. Everything is automatically backed up, and of course, it's shared across devices. And that being said, I will say that the editing tools in Photos are very good. Now, there's not as many of them as there is in Lightroom Mobile. There isn't as many sophisticated tools as there are in Lightroom Mobile, but what's there is good, and for a lot of images, it's all I need. However, when I do need more, I have three other applications that I use. The first one I'm going to talk about is Nitro, N-I-T-R-O. Nitro is by Gentleman Coders, and it is terrific. It's been out, I don't know, I'm going to say about a year now or so. So it is still growing up. But it fills some notable gaps in Photos, primarily raw processing. The one knock on Apple, well, actually there's more than one knock on Apple, but the one knock that I'm going to talk about right now is that they are very slow updating their raw compatibility with new cameras. And when I say very slow, I mean, I'm sometimes talking about over a year, kind of slow. Nitro isn't. Nitro is on top of it. So if a new camera comes out, Nitro is almost as fast as the folks at Adobe with Lightroom in terms of having a raw profile. Not only does Nitro keep up with the new cameras and raw profiles, but it has found a way for you to open an image in Nitro on your iPad, do the work on it, a raw file that isn't supported by Apple, and then you can save that image over to Apple Photos. And it looks fantastic. The cool thing is, it doesn't have to flatten it in order to do that. It actually sends an unsupported RAW file into Photos that now is viewable and workable and exportable and all that kind of stuff. It is truly magic how it does that. So what that means is that you really get to have the best of the Apple universe. In other words, you get to have the wonderful connectivity, you get to have some very cool tools, but yet you still have current raw updates for any camera that you would be using. Nitro has all sorts of other good things. It has an impressive array of editing tools. And if you're someone that doesn't want to use the iCloud storage system and backup and all that kind of stuff, it'll let you work directly with the Files app. So you get to choose. When you work on a photo, do you want it saved to the Photos library, or do you want it saved to a folder in Files, which is just like working with any other folder system in the Finder, and you can just organize them any way you want. So you have your choice with Nitro of working either with Files or with the Photos library. Pretty cool stuff. It's a fantastic application and is very powerful. There are some specialty things that I like to do that go beyond just raw processing and basic masks and linear gradients and all that kind of stuff. Two things that I really like doing on the iPad, because I have that functionality on my computer as well. One is noise reduction, and the other is sampling up to increase the resolution of the image. Now, for instance, when I'm shooting with the Olympus or the OM System TG7, that's a 12 megapixel camera. So I get a shot with it that I really like, which happens all the time. I'm working with it on the iPad, it's looking great. And then I'm going, but I wish it had a little more resolution. Well, that's where Photomator comes in, because using super resolution, I can take it from 4,000 by 3,000 pixels to 8,000 by 6,000 pixels. Yeah, and it looks fantastic. I mean, to my eye, and that's even with zooming in, there is no loss of quality using super resolution. So now suddenly I am not limited by that 12 megapixel sensor. I have basically double that. The other thing that it does really well on the iPad is noise reduction. So again, when you're shooting with smaller sensors, you might get a little bit more noise at the higher ISOs, and Photomator can take care of that as well. Plus, it has a comprehensive editing suite, just like the other apps that we're talking about, with all the basic adjustments that you would want, and then things like channel mixer, LUTs, great monochrome adjustment panel. And like Nitro, Photomator gives you the option to work with either the iCloud Photo Library or the Files app. Very powerful app, fantastic on the iPad. And the thing about it is you can choose just to augment your Photos app if you're in the Apple ecosystem with one of these apps. The reason why I use both of them is because Photomator still uses Apple's raw processing, so there's that gap there that Nitro fills. But Nitro does not have the super resolution or the powerful denoise that Photomator has, so I just have them both. And since they're all ending up in the same library, right, it doesn't make any difference which I work on. I can actually work on an image in Nitro, send it to Photos, play with it in Photos, send it to Photomator, for super resolution, comes back to Photos. It's all super seamless. I have them both for that reason, because for me, they provide different functions that I need. The fifth one is a new addition. It's the newest addition to my workflow, and that's Luminar Mobile. Prior, I had looked at Luminar Mobile, and I liked it, but I didn't love it, and I didn't think that I needed to spend the money to have it in my suite of apps. That has changed because it has continued to evolve at a rapid pace, and you can buy a lifetime license for like $59 now. That's forever and ever, and they're continuing to evolve it. So then I saw, oh, well, let me take a closer look at it. The kind of things that it has now, AI Enhance, which those of you that use Luminar know is super powerful and looks great. AI Structure, AI Relight, which is really fun on the iPad. That's where you get to control the lighting in the foreground and the background, but is very intelligent. AI Skin and Body, okay, and that's, I think, the latest addition to it. They have Sky Replacement, and they have amazing presets. So suddenly, Luminar Mobile kind of adds a whole new dimension to your photo creativity, again, on a tablet, while you're sitting in a coffee shop or on an airplane or wherever you happen to be. Full-size edited images can go into the Photos library. Now they're flattened, so you know what you see is what you get. You've edited them, and then that's the way they appear, and they go in there as JPEGs, but they are full-size. Or you can share smaller versions to basically all the other apps, so it's sort of up to you. Those are the five apps that I'm using on the iPad right now, and I am super happy. Lightroom Mobile, Apple Photos, Nitro, Photomator, and Luminar Mobile. Good times on the road, and then when I get home, I still have all that great stuff waiting for me, and I can either continue working on them, share them, print them, whatever I want to do. But talk about having flexibility. These devices and those apps provide that. Let's take a look at some news from this week. Let's start out with Laowa has a new macro option for Micro Four Thirds users. And those of you that shoot macro with Micro Four Thirds, either Lumix or OM system cameras, might be interested in this because it's, I think, less than half the price of the OM system version. Let me read you about it. Laowa has announced it will be bringing its 90mm f2.8-2x ultra macro APO lens to a new mount, Micro Four Thirds. The lens was originally made for full-frame cameras, and it's been around for the RF, the Z, E, and L mount systems for a few years now, but it's still exciting to see a manufacturer bringing out a new lens for Micro Four Thirds. The lens, which will have a 180mm equivalent field of view on the new mount, has a design with 13 elements, 10 groups, and 3 ED lenses. It can minimum working distance of 20.5 centimeters, 8.1 inches, allowing for 2-to-1 reproduction. Its design is fully manual focus, but the lens has contacts that Laowa says will support XF data communication and electronic aperture control, which is, in fact, the only kind of aperture control for the lens. Unlike the full-frame version, there's no manual aperture ring. And while it's still a full-frame lens at heart, the Micro Four Thirds version is a bit smaller and lighter from the versions made with the other mounts. It comes in at 540 grams, 19 ounces, and measures 4.5 inches long. It accepts a 67 millimeter filter threads. Laowa says the lens will be available starting February 29th for $449. And I think having manual focus for a macro lens isn't that big a deal, right? I mean, AF would be nice if you're using it for other things, you know, for portraits, which you can do still. But I think a manual focus lens for macro work, especially from a lens that's this good and basically at less than half the price, very tempting if you are a macro shooter. By the way, if you want to read all about it, there's more information, including the official press release, then I have the link in the show notes from DP Review. Here's a story from Digital Camera World. This TED Talk hilariously shows that the best way to make people care about wildlife is to make them laugh at comedy photos. I have a link in the show notes. Let me read you what they have to say here. Tom Sullum, co-founder of the Nikon Comedy Wildlife Photography Awards, explains how empathy leads to attitudinal and behavioral shifts. The Nikon Comedy Wildlife Photography Awards promotes wildlife conservation through laughter. Co-founder Tom Sullum recently treated a TED audience to an important conservation lesson in hilarious fashion. Speaking at TED Next Atlanta in November last year, Sullum delved into how positive emotion leads to empathy, which in turn shifts attitudes and behaviors. Contrary to what you might believe, bombarding people with images of animals suffering isn't the best way to make them care. In fact, Sullum shared how it's laughter that gets people on board with preserving the wonders of nature. Referring to images on screen, Sullum shared a poignant thought. It's our job to be custodians of these tender moments, and we should accept coexistence rather than separation, before closing with an image of a grumpy leatherback turtle flipping the audience off. The Nikon Comedy Wildlife Awards is an annual competition celebrating the funniest moments from the natural world captured on camera to dissolve boundaries between species. And there are pictures and more about this story on Digital Camera World. And as I said, the link is in the show notes. What a great idea. Absolutely wonderful. Here's an interesting story from F-Stoppers. Can a pocket-sized telescope be a real astrophotography tool? When I first heard about the Dwarf Mini Smart Telescope, I have to admit I was skeptical. A smart telescope you can carry in a pocket, albeit a large pocket like a photographer's vest, plop down, and produce decent astrophotos seemed like a stretch. Smart telescopes have certainly evolved over the last few years, and I've reviewed a few of them. So here's one from Dwarf Lab that's wrapped up in a small form factor, 7 by 2 inches by 4 inches by 2.4 inches and 1.9 pounds, that claims it can get really good images of the night sky without a lot of fuss. The Dwarf Mini Smart Telescope, it has a pair of 1,016 millimeter and 45 millimeter full frame equivalent lenses. One is wide for Milky Way photography and also acts as a finder scope, and the other can get you a nice field of view for nebula, galaxies, comets, you name it. It can also be used as a nature scope for, say, bird or distant animal photography. It uses a Sony StarVis 2 IMX662 sensor and includes a sun filter and a dual band filter for bringing out narrow band spectrum in a nebula. Amazingly, for such a small telescope, it can find deep sky objects you select in its library and also shoot mosaics for items that won't quite fit in its field of view. It can run 4 hours on battery and will allow you to plug an auxiliary battery in for longer sessions via USB-C port. That same USB port will let you plug the Dwarf Mini into your computer, and it will appear as a hard drive so you can get your images off for further processing. Then he gets into how do you take an image and find the target. Use your smartphone. There's a companion app to do that. The software telescope combination will lock onto your target and keep tracking it. That is really neat. And then he gets into some hands-on work with it. And the pictures are really cool. I mean, the pictures in this article are impressive, especially for, you know, this little telescope that's like super easy to use. He also has some sun shots in there. His further thoughts, how about planets? Nope. They'll just be small dots with no detail. The Dwarf Mini, like most smart telescopes, is designed for galaxies, nebula, the sun, and the moon. I should also note that, like in many recent smart telescopes, you do not have to remain connected with your phone or tablet while the scope is collecting images. Once you have told the Mini what to do, you can do other things on your phone or leave home while the Mini is working for you. Also, there is a mode where you can give it multiple targets and the Mini will follow your instructions, leaving you with two or more stacked images of your targets. It retails for $399. You can buy their tripod, which is sturdy and a good match for the Mini, for $89, but any camera tripod would work. I used their tripod for this review and found that it worked fine. What did he like? The Dwarf Mini is well built and performs much better than you would expect at this price and size. Picture quality is quite good, but don't expect to blow these up to poster size. The software seems slick and I could not find any bugs. I did get a firmware update during testing that added some features. There is good documentation and videos built into the app. You will keep wondering how this little scope takes such good pictures, and I was constantly amazed and pleased with its output. When you get past the gee whiz factor, I don't believe you'll set this aside and get bored with it. The Dwarf Mini works well, will continue to be improved, is one of the coolest gadgets a photographer interested in night sky imaging can have. If any of you out there decide to take the plunge with this $399 device, please post on either our Facebook page or on the Inner Circle page or on Derek's Story Online, any of those places, or send me an email at dstory@gmail.com. I would love to hear what you think of it. This looks so tempting. Sounds really fun for workshops, doesn't it? All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. The 2026 TDS Photography Workshop is in full swing. This week, I'd like to feature a new workshop I haven't been talking about, Becoming a More Creative Photographer online workshop. This one is with Rob Knight. It's easy to study the technical aspects of photography to improve your camera skills. There are endless books, videos, classes, etc. that cover aperture, shutter speed, and ISO. But what about creativity? What techniques can we employ in order to create more compelling and expressive photos? This course will seek to answer those questions. The first session is on March 5th, 2026, and online participation begins a week before that. Rob did this workshop last year, and the reviews on it were terrific. Participants truly enjoyed it, and so we brought it back for a second year this year. You can reserve your spot by using the link in the show notes that I have right here, or you can just go to thenimblephotographer.com or thedigitalstory.com and go to workshops and reserve there. Make sure you do so before March 5th. I would do so, you know, in February. That way that you can start participating when we open up the online space, which will be before the workshop itself. This is going to be a lot of fun, and I hope you can take advantage of the great ideas that Rob has to share. I'd like to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members, the folks that support this community month in and month out, and who also will get a discount on the upcoming creativity workshop by Rob Knight. Inner Circle members get discounts on all of our events, and Inner Circle Bold members will be able to attend the upcoming Backyard Birds webinar, which is in February this month, for absolutely free. And if you're an Inner Circle Bold member and you want to attend that webinar, all you have to do is send me an email to dstory@gmail.com, and I will make sure that I get you on the list. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And if you want to join them, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. And finally, I'd like to have a tip of the lens cap to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story, the folks that have all the supplies that we need to make great artwork from our digital images. They have the paper, they have the know-how, they have the ink. And they have some interesting plans for 2026. And because they are such good partners to the Digital Story community, we will be finding out about those plans first. But in the meantime, those snow days when you're stuck inside is a great time to be making some inkjet prints of all the lovely images that you captured when you're out and about in 2025. To get started, just click on the Red River paper tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. Get yourself some paper, get yourself some knowledge, and make some beautiful prints. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.